Hi, I'm Katie Meyer, political reporter for WHYY. This has been a hectic election cycle with new voting procedures, questions about contested elections, and a divided political climate. And we've been getting a lot of questions from our listeners and readers about how it'll all work. So this hour, we are dedicating time to answering them. Joining me to talk about voting logistics, potential legal challenges, and your constitutional rights this election are Gloria Brown Marshall and Pat Christmas. Gloria is a professor of constitutional law at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and Pat is the policy director at the Good Government Group Committee of 70. Again, this next hour is all about you and what you need to know before November 3rd, and in the days and weeks after. So whether you're in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, or Delaware, we want to hear from you. The show starts right after the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. 5 days left until the presidential election. More than 73 million people have already voted. Millions more are expected to show up at the polls November 3rd. More shortly on where the candidates are today, but first to France, where President Emmanuel Macron has announced he is doubling military presence in the country to 7,000 soldiers after three people were killed today at a church in Nice. France is at its highest alert level since a teacher was killed for showing students a caricature of Islam's prophet Muhammad that was published in the satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo. The paper and people across France are defending freedom of expression. Anti-France protests have erupted, though, across the Muslim world over what demonstrators describe as deeply insulting conduct deserving of retribution. This as France prepares to reinstate a lockdown due to a sharp increase in new coronavirus cases. The numbers also keep getting worse here in the U.S. More than 8.8 million people infected, nearly 228,000 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, says numbers will rise this fall.
We're going to have many more hospitalizations, and that will inevitably lead to more deaths. So this is an untenable situation.
Fauci on CNBC's The News with Shepard Smith. Wyoming Public Radio Savannah Marr says another member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force is visiting COVID-19 hotspots today with apparently tempered messaging on masks.
Dr. Deborah Birx made stops in North Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming, which are seeing some of the highest COVID-19 infection rates in the country. She urged residents of those states to mask up. But speaking to state and local leaders in Riverton, Wyoming, she stopped short of recommending that they impose a mask mandate.
Governors and mayors and tribal nation leaders, chairmen, really understand their community best about how to bring these guidelines forward.
Montana does have a statewide mask mandate in place, but in many counties, police have refused to enforce it.
Savannah Marr reporting. Back to the campaign trail where Trump and Biden are rallying votes in Florida. Here's NPR's Asma Khalid.
Both men will host rallies in Tampa today. It's a sign of just how crucial the I-4 corridor is. That's that central strip of Florida known as a swing region in the state. But the events themselves will also highlight Biden and Trump's vastly different approaches to campaigning. Trump is holding one of his signature big in-person rallies. Biden will be hosting a drive-in car rally where people can remain socially distant. Florida has 29 electoral votes at stake, and polls show the race is essentially tied. Florida is known for its razor-tight presidential elections. The state is key for both candidates, but perhaps more critical for President Trump, who has a very limited path to 270 without Florida.
Asma Khalid reporting. This is NPR.
News. Good afternoon. I'm Priyanka Tiwari. The U.S. Supreme Court has denied the latest of several Republican challenges to Pennsylvania's voting procedures. However, the justices left open a window for further challenges after the election. WHYY's Katie Meyer reports that means there's a chance a portion of the ballots that Pennsylvania receives could be invalidated in the days or weeks following Election Day.
The decision relates to a ruling the state Supreme Court made in September. Due to mail ballot delays, state justices said counties can accept ballots that arrive up to 3 days after November 3rd, as long as they were postmarked by the end of Election Day. Pennsylvania Republicans appealed to the federal courts. Their first suit asked for the deadline extension to be halted, and it was denied. The second asked for it to be ruled unconstitutional. The Supreme Court denied the second appeal, too, but mainly because it's too close to Election Day. In a statement, three conservative justices said they think there are real questions about the deadline extension and would consider a new case about throwing out the ballots after Election Day. It's unclear if there would be enough justices on board to pass that kind of ruling. Katie Meyer, WHYY News. Katie Meyer in Philadelphia.
The Delaware Attorney General's office has backed away from a suggestion that anyone distributing literature at polling places that accurately cites state law regarding voter fraud could be charged with voter intimidation. Authorities this week had reminded voters of their rights and responsibilities and advised that officials will strictly enforce voter intimidation laws. Officials also said they will guard against intimidation, whether armed or unarmed, but acknowledged that Delawareans are not prohibited by state law from carrying firearms while voting. A traffic note, there are delays on I-95 between Academy Road and Cottman Avenue. A jackknife tractor trailer went through the barrier wall and is blocking two left lanes in each direction. Currently 53 degrees and raining in Philadelphia at 12:06. Today's highs near 56. A flood warning is in effect till this evening. This is WHYY.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio, and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Katie Meyer, WHYY's political reporter, and we thank you so much for joining us today for our live call-in show about voting and the election. With many voters confused about the voting process this year and frustrated by the election in general, our goal is to alleviate or help alleviate or try to alleviate some of the worry this election season and help you cast your ballot with confidence. So to help answer your questions, I am joined by two experts. Gloria Brown Marshall is a professor of constitutional law at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. She teaches classes on constitutional law, race in the law, evidence, and gender and justice. Gloria, welcome.
Thank you. Looking forward to the questions.
Oh, me too. And I'm also joined by Pat Christmas, the policy director for the Committee of 70. Pat's responsible for managing 70's policy projects, advocacy campaigns, many other things besides that. Pat, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
All right. So both of you too. Oh, and by the way, we welcome your questions and comments. You can call in 1-888-477-9499. You can also hashtag on social media your democracy, and we will get your question. Again, we welcome any questions and comments from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, wherever you are. I think, you know, my expertise is in Pennsylvania, as is Pat's. Gloria has a much broader knowledge base that she can pull from, but we are happy to take a crack at anything you would love to ask us. So I guess I'll just start with a question to both of you, Pat and Gloria. Gloria, you first. What, and I know this is a big question, but just in brief, what are you looking at this election day? What are the top things that you think we need to be keeping an eye on?
I think we need to keep an eye on when the votes are going to be counted and whose votes are going to be counted. I think the U.S. Supreme Court has been ruling on, and they have about 300 cases. I don't know how many of those they're actually going to choose from the bunch, but they've looked at these issues of state courts versus federal courts. And overarching, it looks like the U.S. Supreme Court has decided when state courts, like the Pennsylvania state courts, like the North Carolina state courts, have decided a certain date that is going to be the date that's the cutoff, then they've been able to support that by a court. But we know in Wisconsin, the federal courts decided to extend the deadline, and they said, no, the deadline is going to be those ballots received by Election Day. So these are the types of issues, and people are wondering, will my vote count? And with such rainy weather, people are standing in line because they're fearful that their vote won't count. And so that's one of the major issues on Election Day and in this election process.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into a lot of that in some more detail. But first, Pat, you know, what are the big things you're looking at?
Yeah, I'll name several. I mean, first is we have a lot of mail-in and absentee ballots out there that have not been returned. I'm seeing the data right now. We have about 68% of those ballots were requested. We have about 3 million Pennsylvanians who requested absentee or mail-ins. Only 68% have been returned. And as we were just noting, these deadlines are quite strict, and we're urging people to get them returned in person by 8 o'clock on the 3rd. So that's one. The other is the lines we're going to have at polling places on Election Day. Folks are going to have to be very, very patient, probably a lot of provisional ballots cast And then lastly, the mis- and the disinformation that we're going to have, what we have right now, but that's going to continue through election week, especially, as Gloria noted, it's going to take us a little bit of time to count these ballots.
Absolutely. And so I think actually one of the first things that maybe we should talk about is that Supreme Court decision that you both mentioned, because that's something that's kind of new and it's looming over this election, as have a lot of Supreme Court decisions. So just to give, you know, by way of introduction, this was the second appeal that Republicans in Pennsylvania had made to a decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that allowed a deadline extension for mail-in ballots to be received. It said that, you know, ballots could be received if they were postmarked by the end of November 3rd, Election Day, they could be received for 3 days after that. So by 5 p.m. on November 6th. Republicans, again, have been appealing this. But the decision yesterday by the U.S. Supreme Court, it upheld the extension. But, Pat, it also kind of left a window open for maybe some further questions about ballots, right?
It did. And the Department of State has agreed to have ballots that come in after November 3rd be segregated and set aside. So I guess it's technically possible that the court could come in after the fact and review and have a decision. I'd certainly welcome Gloria's thoughts on that. But as far as voters at home need to know, I think the message is this: get these ballots returned in person, side election offices, drop boxes by 8 o'clock on the 3rd. If you have to put it in the mail, do that. But the U.S. Postal Service advised voters across the United States weeks ago that if they were going to use the mail system, they should put ballots in the mail no later than 7 days before the election, which was this past Tuesday. So get these things in and return them in person if you possibly can.
And Gloria, I'll ask you about this decision as well. Contextualize this for us. How likely is it that ballots could be called into question after Election Day?
Oh, it's going to be very likely. I mean, I think the White House has already signaled that. And it's the reason why we see a greater number of people voting now than in 2016. And it's the old question, are people voting early and often? So people also need to know, and I'm sure Pat will also talk about this, once somebody votes, that is the vote. So they can have an absentee.
Nope. We might have lost Gloria for a second there. Gloria, you there? Well, in any case, I think, you know, the point is well taken that and we'll get Gloria back in just a second. The point is well taken that we are seeing significant challenges. Significant questions about, you know, the validity of votes. And, you know, we're probably going to see questions about, you know, how the outcome is going to work. I will also add that the decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, this question of can votes be invalidated after the election, that was raised by three conservative justices, Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas. You know, the newest conservative justice, Amy Coney Barrett, did not rule on this case. Brett Kavanaugh also did not join them in this ruling. So it's unclear if they would have enough support from the conservative wing of the Supreme Court to, you know, really call into question these ballots. But, you know, nevertheless, this is something that has been raised, and I think it is something that is worth, you know, keeping an eye on. Now, Pat, I will ask you, you mentioned just making sure you get your ballots in early and, you know, now handing them in person, not by mail. Where can people go to hand in their ballots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are satellite election offices in most counties, especially the larger counties. These are offices that were made possible by Act 77, this historic election reform package from last year. Philadelphia, for example, has 17 of these offices that will be open until 8 o'clock on Tuesday, November 3rd. There are drop boxes available as well, 11 in the city of Philadelphia. But I know the surrounding counties in southeast Pennsylvania also have both these offices and these drop boxes. These should be listed on your county election website, which is, you know, easy enough to find online. But if you go to votespa.com/dropbox, that'll also take you to a full listing for the entire state as to where these locations are.
All right. And I think we have Gloria back, right? Are you back, Gloria?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. Glad you're here. I think we have a caller on the line. This is going to be Paul in Philadelphia. Paul, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, hi, Paul. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Doing well. What is your question?
Okay. My question is this. If the Supreme Court, evidently it's given itself this window to change its mind, and if Pennsylvania is the state that swings the election to Joe Biden, and then the Supreme Court, now with Amy Coney Barrett sitting on the case, changes its mind about these ballots, and these 150,000 or so late ballots make the difference in this national election, is that legal? Is that constitutional for the Supreme Court to change its mind in a manner like that?
Well, thank you so much for your question, Paul. I will preface by saying we don't know how many ballots are going to come in late. And we also, you know, obviously do not know how the court's going to rule. I think it's less about whether they change their mind and more about whether, you know, there's enough consensus behind this idea that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court acted improperly. But I will put this to the actual expert, Gloria. What do you think?
Well, this is why Bush versus Gore in 2000 has made an indelible mark on the minds of voters. The Supreme Court, in Justice Alito's opinion, dealing with the Pennsylvania Republicans' appeal of extending the deadline for counting votes, left this open. Justice Alito wrote in his opinion that they're going to, in a way, revisit this after the election, which puts this hanging chad, this issue to the people in their minds. Will the Supreme Court then, with Amy Coney Barrett on the court, decide, because the court has been politicized by Donald Trump, to say we're going to stop the counting and decide by the court who wins, as opposed to letting the ballots decide who wins? So I think the listener's call is very important. The question is on the minds of a lot of people. Will the Supreme Court actually decide this election?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's unfortunately sort of a wait-and-see situation in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Pat, I want to ask you one of the questions that we've gotten from a ton of listeners. What should people do if they applied for a mail-in ballot and have not yet received one? In Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah. So there have been some number. It's been, you know, we do believe a small number of voters who have not received ballots for some reason, and the issues have varied. I mean, there have been issues with the state's voter database, the SURE system, which is almost 20 years old. We are going to replace that very soon. And then, you know, individual counties, especially as they've had to create this brand new infrastructure to operate a full-scale mail election, this has not been a flawless operation. And the bottom line is this: for folks who applied for an absentee or mail-in ballot, but they did not receive it, they have a couple options. They can either go to an elections office, to their main county elections office, which every county will have one. And then especially in the larger counties where there are satellite election offices, many or most of those are quote-unquote full service, like the 17 in Philadelphia. You can go there. You can request a replacement ballot. You'll get it on the spot. You can complete it on the spot and return it on the spot. So that's really your best option. The other option would be to go to your polling place on election day. And because you will not have your ballot and declaration envelope to surrender and spoil to then use the voting system, you'll have to vote provisionally. And, yeah, I think we're going to want to stress throughout the session that a golden rule for Tuesday is going to be using that provisional ballot to make sure that no one who's properly registered goes home without voting. That's exactly why that provisional ballot is there as a safeguard.
Yeah, absolutely. And Pat, just like 30 seconds here, I want to contextualize for people, you know, how hard has it been for counties to run this election?
It's been remarkably hard. There's been a laundry list of challenges to execute the elections this year. Act 77 of 2019 was passed at the end of last year. The biggest set of changes to our election code since it was written in 1937. New voting systems across all 67 counties. The pandemic hit. We had to change our primary date. Emergency authorization to do polling place consolidation. Lack of poll workers, having to recruit back those poll workers. It's been a huge task, and they're doing the best they can.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to a break. When we come back, we will take more of your questions and comments. Again, call us at 888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, the Penn Medicine and Virtua Health Cancer Program. The Penn Medicine Virtua Cancer Program offers a full range of treatment options for cancer patients right here in South Jersey, including a breast reconstruction program, minimally invasive surgery, and advanced radiation treatments for colon and lung cancer, and dedicated nurse navigation to help guide patients through their complex cancer journey. More details are available at virtua.org/penncancer.
On the next Fresh Air, we'll talk about the profound and enduring impact of the coronavirus on the way we live. It's the subject of the new book, Apollo's Arrow, by Dr. Nicholas Christakis, who will be our guest. He's a professor at Yale, where he directs the Human Nature Lab. Join us. this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
We are back on WHYY taking your questions about the election and all that has to go with it. I'm Katie Meyer, WHYY's political reporter, and I am joined by Gloria Brown Marshall, a professor of constitutional law at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and Pat Christmas, the policy director for the Committee of 70. It's a good government group in Pennsylvania. All right, so both of you back at it. One of the big questions that I have been getting from voters, and I'm sure you have as well, and I'll put this to Pat first, it has to do with Pennsylvania's ballot tracking system. People have been complaining that it hasn't been updated enough, that you know, that their mail ballot was sent in a while ago, and the portal says it hasn't been recorded yet. It still says it's pending. Pat, what should people know about that?
Yeah. So again, this goes back to this SURE system, this state voter database, which is almost two decades old. It needs to be replaced. There have been glitches with it. And I guess I'd say this. For those folks who have completed their absentee mail-in ballots and they've returned it and they know they didn't make any mistakes, they should sit tight. You know, their ballots are going to be counted. I know there is a glitch, at least in Philadelphia, that's preventing some number of folks who get from getting confirmation that their ballots have been submitted. So that's why, again, if you know you've done this properly, you've returned your ballot, you know, rest assured it's going to be counted. But this online tracking system actually is a new feature, and it has not worked perfectly, and has actually caused a great many more questions, concerns than, you know, perhaps even if we didn't have it at all. But that's why this messaging challenge has been substantial, because there are these critical steps that folks need to follow, right? Use that secrecy envelope, make sure you sign and date the outside declaration on the back, and to get it in timely.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I should remind listeners, again, we can take your calls at 888-477-9499 or on social media if you hashtag your democracy. Gloria, I'll go to you now. This is a question that I've been getting, throughout this election, and it's a question of electors and how they're selected and whether legislatures have any power to, you know, go against the will of voters. And this is a complicated issue. I know it can vary by state. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the Electoral College was created by our framers because although they wanted to have a popular vote elect the president and many other offices, initially all of the offices had a role in the Electoral College, and the Electoral College would select those. And they decided that they would amend the Constitution to end the Electoral College's control over the popular vote when it came to all of the other offices except for president and vice president of the United States. And so each state has its own formula for creating their own elector who will be part of that electoral college. And it's really, some people have called it a shadow government. Other people have not said too much about it because you only hear about it in these controversial elections like we had in 2016. And so some people believe that.
Oh. We may have lost Gloria again.
An amendment to the Constitution.
Yeah. Can you say that last part again, Gloria? You cut out for a second.
Well, many people are asking for an amendment to the Constitution to end the Electoral College. And so that's something that's been on the board, but it takes a lot to amend the Constitution. And so we don't see that happening anytime soon. But there is a lot of pushback against the Electoral College because of its secrecy.
And there's also sort of an interstate compact to basically circumvent the Electoral College, which I've always thought is pretty interesting. But is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, once again, each state is deciding how they're going to push back against the Electoral College. And these compacts of states that are coming together to try to come up with their own formula, because what's going on, larger states are saying, well, it's not fair that these smaller states have so much power. Mm-hmm. But once again, the framers had in mind that they didn't want the large states like Pennsylvania and New Jersey to overshadow the smaller states like Delaware when it comes to political power. So it's always going to be this struggle. And as you know, all politics are local. And so we'll figure out how the states are going to decide how to circumvent and how other people are deciding how to amend the Constitution to lessen the power of the Electoral College.
Yeah, interesting. Not strictly a question for this election, just a question about the election process in general. We've got a question from John, and this is quite timely. He asks, will voter turnout be less in Philadelphia on Election Day, given the presence of the National Guard in Philadelphia and the current unrest? Is this voter suppression? Now, obviously, you know, this has been an ongoing thing in Philadelphia for the last couple of days after you know, police shot and killed a man. And certainly it's been kind of a tense and tumultuous time for the city. Pat, just like in your expertise about turnout and the things that affect turnout, specifically in Pennsylvania and specifically in Philadelphia, I mean, do you think this is going to have an impact?
Well, you know, frankly, I don't think so. I know there's a lot of anxiety around this just election generally, the mail-in voting and voting in person. You know, folks should rest assured there are going to be a lot of good actors out there making sure that folks are safe. You know, one of the main drivers of turnout is a competitive election, right? Do voters want to cast ballots in this election? And I don't think we could have a more competitive and a more high-profile election than this one. And from what we've seen in the lines outside these satellite election offices, and at least and what we've heard anecdotally, folks are going to get themselves in line, and they're not going to leave until they cast their ballot. So we're expecting still historic turnout in this election.
Mm-hmm. And I'll ask that to you as well, Gloria. I mean, is this something that would cause concern for you, the presence of a National Guard in Philly?
Yes, it would. And voter suppression has been a major issue of this election, as well as voter intimidation. And those two concerns of whether or not the National Guard is going to spur people on to want to vote, as Pat has said, with this contentious election, or whether or not it's going to make people feel they need to stay home because it's not safe. I also want to speak about people feeling that maybe they want to wear certain protest paraphernalia to the polls. Mm. And what can they wear to the polls? And poll workers cannot wear any politicized paraphernalia or T-shirts or masks of that nature, but the voters can. No, nor can we have the type of brandishing of weapons over people who feel they're not safe and therefore they're going to bring their weapons to the polls, but they can't brandish those weapons. And then the question is whether or not could they have those weapons when they go vote in the school, where it's not legal to bring a weapon into the school. So these issues then can make people second guess whether or not it's worth voting and then the bad weather. But I think overall, as Pat has pointed out, when it's a contentious election like this, people are going to figure out a way to make their voices heard through their votes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up an interesting point, you know, open carry laws and how that kind of, you know, affects the polls. Pennsylvania is an open carry state. And, you know, there's no specific law that prevents you from, for instance, open carrying to the polls. Now, I will say there was one county in Pennsylvania that did attempt to pass a resolution saying that you cannot open carry at the polls. That's Erie County. But, you know, we're not sure if it's going to be contested. And, you know, that's just the one county. So that is something to keep in mind. We also, I think we have a caller on the line right now. We've got Alyssa. Is she ready?
Hello.
Hi, Alyssa.
Yes.
Hi, thank you so much for calling. What's your question?
Oh, I already asked it, and they said they were going to put me in a queue, I guess, to ask it.
Okay, so, yeah. Well, would you like to ask it on the air?
I wouldn't mind because I think there's some confusion about the question, which is we have our mail-in ballots, but we haven't voted yet because my husband and I decided we want to vote in person because we feel so strongly we want those votes counted up front in Pennsylvania. So there's no controversy. However, I heard on WHYY yesterday that they were advising people in Pennsylvania who are in this situation to vote by mail, in the, you know, put our mail-ins in a, you know, in the county or ballot box by November 3rd or before, and not get in the way of the voting in person because our being there might delay other people. So we want to know, we want advice as to how best to do this to support getting our vote in and getting all votes in.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for asking that question. I think this is something that a lot of people are thinking about, you know, sort of weighing the desire to get your vote counted as early as possible with the desire to not cause long lines at the polling places. Pat, is there any advice you would give Alyssa?
Yeah, it's a great question, and we would really urge people, if you have your absentee and mail-in ballot and you're trying to make that kind of decision, complete the ballot. Complete it carefully. Again, nice, clean, oval, you know, marked ovals with black or blue pen. Use the secrecy envelope, sign and date the back, and then drop it off in person. What's going to happen is if we have a bunch of folks heading to polling places looking to spoil their ballots, that's a brand-new process. The voters have never gone through before, and the poll workers never gone through it before. And the judge of elections, who's the chief election official at each division, has to oversee that. The judge of elections also has to oversee the administration of provisional ballots. So if we have folks unnecessarily spoiling their mail-in ballots, it's going to really add to the line. So I definitely hear the anxiety, though, around mail-in voting and just getting the ballots cast quickly. But if that's the sort of decision that someone's weighing, they really should complete the mail-in ballot and get it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just add that, again, like, voting is voting, whether you drop your ballot off at a drop box or at your county election office or at a satellite office, or if you vote in person, your vote is going to be counted. And, you know, we all, you know, there's always these questions about whether the process is going to work as it should. But, you know, for the purposes of of voters, you can trust it. You can trust that your ballots are going to be counted. I have a question about signatures that we've been getting from a lot of people. In Pennsylvania, does your signature on your mail ballot need to match the voter log? Pat, this is something that you've talked about a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't. There's nothing in state law, and this is most of our election laws from 1937, that allows for any sort of signature matching or analysis. The Department of State issued guidance, or rather instructions to the counties, not to set aside or reject any ballots based on signature analysis, and then went to straight to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to seek kind of reinforcement of that guidance. And the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that signatures, cannot be a factor for rejecting ballots. Now, if the signature is missing entirely, that ballot will be rejected. But, if the signature looks a little bit different, middle initial in one instance, not a middle initial in another, it's not going to matter.
Mm-hmm. And for callers who or people who want to, get more questions answered, the number for that is 888-477-9499. You can also hashtag Your Democracy on social media. Now, another question that we have been getting a lot is about satellite offices in Pennsylvania. I think this is also a question for Pat, actually. What are the parameters? How can people use them going forward? How long are they open? What can they do for you now that you can no longer request a mail-in ballot in Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to vary a little bit county to county. So, for example, in the city of Philadelphia, we've had 17 of these offices. They've been very, very busy up until October 27th, that was this past Tuesday, to let people apply on the spot for mail-in ballot and then receive it on the spot. As of October 28th, these offices can only be used as drop-off locations or to request a replacement mail-in ballot. If someone didn't receive it. So at least in Philadelphia, these offices will remain open until November 3rd at 8 o'clock, which is the deadline to return an absentee or mail-in ballot. In other counties, it's going to vary a little bit. So votespa.com is the state's voting website, and I believe there's votespa.com/early voting will take you straight to the list of drop-off sites. Also, if you find your local county election office, the schedules and the services available should be listed there too, because not every office is going to be able to provide the replacement ballot, for example. So it's going to be a county-by-county circumstance.
Mm-hmm. And I also have a quick note from a listener, which I appreciate. Just to clarify, Pennsylvania's laws on open carry, you can do it without a permit in most of the state, but you cannot in Philadelphia. You need a permit to open carry in Philadelphia. So thank you to the listener, Deborah, who wanted us to make sure that was clear. I want to go now to how ballots are going to be counted. And Pat, you were just alluding to counties having very different procedures for different things. I'll go to Gloria first on this. We've talked about court challenges. We have talked about, sort of lack of clarity about when we're going to know when results are coming. Is there anything you're watching specifically in terms of the ballot count?
Well, when you look at the ballot count, I was a poll watcher. I used to live in Philadelphia, and I was a poll watcher, and I was somebody who stayed there till the end when they locked up the machines and all of that. And I think about now, and as Pat was saying, some of the antiquated ways in which we're counting the polls and making the polls available to people to make sure that each vote is counted. My concern is this. If we are looking at each vote and how each vote is being counted from the hanging sheds of checking signatures of whether or not that signature is the same signature that you have online, I mean, all these things that we have to do, I don't see how this election is going to end anytime soon after November 3rd. And that's the question that has made people feel very uncomfortable. Whether or not their vote will be counted, whether or not votes will be thrown out, will we be able to trust the post office to get the ballots to these polling places and to the places to be counted in the first place? Because there was a question earlier in the season about what the post office was doing, whether or not the lines were too long. There are so many issues, I think, that people are concerned about, and that's giving this issue of trust. And we've been talking about trust and trust in the system. I think that's giving this issue of trust a heightened place in people's minds when it's coming to this election. And so there's so many different ways in which we're going to be counting these ballots that human error could take place, but also human beings are going to be counting these ballots as well as machines.
Mm-hmm. And just to give, you know, I think listeners a little bit of comfort about this, like there are processes in place. We do more or less know how this is going to go. But Pat, I do want to ask you, you know, counties have some leeway in how quickly and in what order they count certain ballots, right? I've heard, for instance, that, you know, Cumberland County, a relatively large county outside of Harrisburg, isn't going to start counting ballots, mail-in ballots, rather, until the day after Election Day. You know, what are you hearing about different plans? How does that affect the outcome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Gloria noted we're not going to know the outcome certainly on Election Day or the day after. I mean, part of this will depend on margins, whether it's the presidential race or any other race. But I know in Philadelphia County, and I believe this is the case probably in all the other large counties that are going to have hundreds of thousands of ballots to process, they're going to start at 7 o'clock in the morning, which is the earliest they can start by law. And they're going to be opening envelopes, pulling out ballots, flattening those ballots, scanning those ballots, and tabulating the results 24 hours a day until they finish. Part of the reason this takes so long is because hopefully for as many ballots as possible, they will be inside two envelopes. So those envelopes have to be cut open. The inner secrecy envelope has to be pulled out of the outer envelope. That has to be cut open. The ballot taken out of that. So it's a very time intensive process. There has been new equipment procured by a whole bunch of counties, including Philadelphia, that's going to really speed up the process. Because in the June 2nd primary, you know, Philadelphia wasn't able to start even on Election Day either. They had to start the next day just because of pure capacity limits. So it's going to take us several days at least to get through most of the count. And as far as like the big questions everybody's wondering, like what's the outcome of the election, it's going to depend both on the margins and then how quickly we get these counted. There's also a possibility that challenges on the ballot applications could come in, which we'll know on Friday.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know neither of you is a pollster, but we have, you know, polls do give us some indication of what the margins might be in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania in general. You know, right now we're looking at sort of a 5-point split between, you know, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Gloria, I'm wondering, because I know, like, you know, you're a person who watches this stuff. I mean, is that are you preparing yourself for a close election?
Yes and no. What normally happens, and Ted might agree with me or not, we rarely count every single vote on Election Day.
Yeah.
Usually there's some margin of error that the polls show, and then someone can see.
Yeah.
And then the votes are later counted. So I think at this point we have the swing states like Pennsylvania, North Carolina, the Ohio, and when they start to show...
Gloria, we're going to have to cut you off. I'm sorry. We're going to have to go to a break real quick, but we will come back to that answer right after. We will be back in about a minute.
Supporting WHYY, Rendering Justice, a poignant exhibition examining mass incarceration in America, curated by Jesse Crimes, is on virtual display now. presented by Mural Arts Philadelphia and the African American Museum in Philadelphia, and generously funded by the Art for Justice Fund. The exhibition focuses on rendering visible the people and perspectives hidden by the criminal justice system. Listeners can explore Rendering Justice online at aampmuseum.org/rendering-justice.
For the final sprint to Election Day, a big look at where misinformation is cropping up and how big tech has done on its pledge to shut it out of the 2020 race. Plus, seeking solace in cultural touchstones like the Charlie Brown Halloween special, which for the first time isn't available to everyone with network television. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRX. Weekdays at 2 on WHYY.
We are back taking your questions here on WHYY. I'm Katie Meyer, political reporter for WHYY, here with Gloria Brown Marshall of John Jay College of Criminal Justice and Pat Christmas of the Committee of 70. And now we've got a couple calls on the line that I do want to get to. But first, Gloria, we cut you off there for a second. You were saying that you're anticipating and also not anticipating a pretty close election. Would you want to just finish your thought there?
Yes, Katie. It's because we have these huge swing states like Pennsylvania, and if Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, those major states come out for one candidate over another, then we'll begin to see the other states fall in line too. So they're going to be looking at, the pollsters are going to be looking at those swing states and figure out, based on those swing states, who the leader is actually going to be and whether or not a candidate will concede.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of like put a fine point on that, like one of the things that pollsters look at, for instance, is if, you know, for instance, Joe Biden, who's leading in Pennsylvania, ends up underperforming there, we also start to look at whether he's also underperforming in Vermont, New Hampshire, these states that don't get quite so much polling. We've got Steve on the line. Steve, you're in Philadelphia. What is your question? Steve, you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Steve. What would you like to ask?
Hi. Well, first of all, thank you very much for doing this. This is great. I have some questions about the Supreme Court's decision yesterday and its effect on mail-in ballots that are now going to be segregated if they're received after 8 p.m. on Election Day. So essentially, the Supreme Court just announced that they're not going to expedite the motion that was filed by the PAGOP to for about counting mail-in ballots up to 3 days after they're receiving their postmark before. But Alito, in his comments on the decision, explicitly left open the possibility of the Supreme Court considering it after the election and actually pointed out the importance of doing it. I guess my question is that there are already counties, Cumberland County specifically, that have announced that they're not going to count any mail-in ballots until the day after the election, 9 a.m. on November 4th, essentially meaning that no mail-in ballots are going to be counted the day of the election. And I guess, is there a possibility that the Supreme Court later rules that ballots to count must be cast on Election Day and counted on Election Day, and the possibility that all of these mail-in ballots would then be invalidated since they counted the day after?
I will put that question to Pat. Pat, what are your thoughts?
Well, I guess for starters, to be clear, as far as the actual counting of the ballots, it will be impossible to count the ballots by midnight on November 3rd. That's not going to happen. And with, you know, with the U.S. Supreme Court decision has left in place right now, but as you noted, Steve, that left the door open to possibly come back to later is whether or not ballots that are received by the counties by Friday, November 6th, you know, if those are going to be counted. I mean, right now, I mean, I personally expect that they will be. Gloria would have more context on that. But that's why the message, as far as voters are concerned, is to get these ballots in early, and to get them in person if they possibly can by 8 o'clock on the 3rd, and yeah, minimize the number of ballots that are traveling in the mail system.
Yeah, and Gloria, what are your thoughts?
I'm going back to what I was saying before about trust. There's so much different information that people are receiving about mail-in as well as in-person early voting and on the day of the vote. I think that we know that these votes are not all going to be counted on election day or the next day, that this is going to be an extended process. There are going to be challenges to this, and that people need to understand that different counties and the number of personnel they have to even count votes will have a determining factor. We also have military votes that come in, and they're going to be a little bit delayed. So this is going to be, I think, a week-long process, and there will be challenges to whether or not there could be a person who's going to claim victory and another person is going to concede based on those first 2 days after November 3rd.
Mm-hmm. And I'll also add, and I think we mentioned this before, but it bears repeating, the Department of State has given guidance to Pennsylvania counties about what they should do with ballots that come in between 8 p.m. on November 3rd and 5 p.m. on November 6th, those late ballots that might be contested. They are supposed to what they call segregate them and put them in a sealed box and not open them or do anything with them until the state basically tells them what to do. So those are it's kind of like the TBD pile of ballots. And again, if it's a wide margin, those might not even matter. We're not expecting that many. However, if it's a close race, these are going to be important ballots. So again, something to watch. And it's not exactly clear what the Supreme Court's going to do yet. But Steve, very good question. Thank you for asking. We've also got Paul on the line. Paul, what is your question? Paul, you there?
Hello.
Hi, Paul. How are you? You're on air. How's it going?
Oh, good. Let me tell Alexa stop.
Paul, real quick, can you turn your radio off?
Yeah, I was just it's in the background. It's streaming. I have a quick question. I was with a friend the other day, and she said, "Oh my goodness, I don't remember if I sealed my security envelope on the inside." And I thought, "Wow, did I?" Next question is, if I now go to my polling place with the thought that perhaps my mail-in is invalid, can I vote in person, and therefore there are basically I'm covering myself?
Great question. We have heard so much about security envelopes in Pennsylvania, so forgive me, listeners who already know this, but just to reiterate, the secrecy envelope is the inside envelope that you put your absentee or mail-in ballot into, and then you put that envelope inside the bigger one that has your, the postage, prepaid postage, and the address of your county elections office on it. If the secrecy envelope's not there, the ballot won't be counted. But, Paul's more specific question is, does it matter if the secrecy envelope is sealed? Pat, I'm not sure I know the answer to that.
First time I've heard that question. I'd say this. Technically, if someone has returned their mail-in ballot or absentee ballot and they think they've made a mistake, they are allowed to go to a polling place and vote a provisional. And what's going to happen is if the mail-in or absentee ballot is set aside and rejected and you vote that provisional, the provisional ballot will count. If your mail-in or absentee ballot was good to go and that's counted, your provisional ballot will be set aside. So election officials are looking at that on the back end. None of the guidance or the litigation addressed the matter of whether or not the secrecy envelope was sealed, which is how I think you and Katie and I haven't heard this question before. I mean, my assessment here on the spot is that that ballot is going to be moved along and processed with the rest of them because it was inside the secrecy envelope.
Yeah.
It should be fine.
There's nothing in the statute that says the secrecy envelope has to be sealed. I'm almost positive because I have read it a couple times now. But, Paul, really good question. That's something that I might ask the Secretary of State. We also have another caller on the line. This is Chris from Trenton, New Jersey. Chris, what is your question? Chris, you there?
Hi, yes, I am.
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Very good. What is your question?
So I actually, it's not a question. It's like a comment.
Sure.
Or like a suggestion, I guess. There's this organization called Drive Your Ballot that has a hotline. And if people like need a ride to drop off their mail-in ballot or like get a replacement ballot at the election office, or if they need a ride on election day, they can call the hotline.
All right. That is great to know. Thank you so much for that information, Chris.
Of course.
And we have a couple of comments that we're getting from listeners. Clem says if you mail your ballot in, it will be too late. Drop it off. Yes, that is true. You know, it might make it in, but it's not worth the risk. So definitely try your darndest to drop your ballot off in person. We also have a caller who says that mail-in ballots should be in black ink. Actually, that's something I wondered myself when I was filling out my own ballot. Pat, is there a rule on the ink specifications for a mail ballot?
Yeah, I believe the instructions in most, if not all, counties are for voters to use black or blue ink when they complete those ovals. And I would have to go back and check the guidance on if a voter were to use ink of a different color, what they would do with that ballot. Again, my presumption on the spot is they may have to recreate that ballot separately so it can be scanned. That's a process that counties sometimes have to do if a ballot is damaged, for example, when it comes back in, and the markings are clear enough, but it can't go underneath the scanner. But that's a good question. I think we'll have to just double check on that. But do use blue or black ink, mm-hmm. And you'll be okay.
Yeah. Make sure you fill your ballot out neatly. Another question just about logistical stuff. Can I take, this person asked, a sibling's sealed mail ballot to drop off, but I'll just kind of broaden that out to, can I take someone else's ballot to drop off? Pat, is there, what are the rules on that?
Yeah, so this is another kind of tricky situation we're in because so many people are voting this way for the first time. The law is very clear. Voters have to return their own ballots, whether you were taking it to a drop box or a side of the election office or, around the corner to the post office. Those folks who are physically unable to return their absentee or mail-in ballot have to complete what is called a designated agent form. This is listed on the votespa.com website. It has to be downloaded. The person who is unable to return their ballot signs it. The designated agent, quote unquote, signs it, and then that designated agent can then return that ballot to county election officials. But that's definitely a bit of a barrier that a lot of folks are running into.
Mm-hmm. Gloria, I want to go back to you had mentioned voter intimidation before, and obviously this is something that you're taking really seriously. And I'm curious. I know this, I'm sure, varies widely by state, but can you give us a sense of what the safeguards are against that, and what the penalties are if someone is found to have been intimidating voters intentionally?
Well, it is an old part of American voting, that voter intimidation has taken place throughout the centuries. But I think that the laws are very clear. You cannot intimidate voters. So even in an open carry state, you can't brandish the weapon. So if you have this weapon and you use it to intimidate other people at the polls, or hang around the polls with your weapon after you've voted, then the law enforcement can come and either ask the person to move or arrest the person for voter intimidation. It is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the other part of this is the question of voter suppression. And the voter suppression issue is whether or not there are certain communities that don't have the adequate number of voting and polling places. And this issue of confusion around how long people can stay in line, and that might be something that goes from county to county, because usually if the person is in line and the time for voting is over but they were already in line, they should be allowed to vote. There are certain people who are making themselves makeshift poll watchers who are saying people have to get out of the line, and that's another mechanism of voter intimidation, by actually telling people what the rules are and their and it's false information. And that's a way of indirectly intimidating people to get out of line when they're already in line.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that brings up something that I really wanted to bring up, and I'm glad you reminded me of it, because in Pennsylvania, we have this quasi-early voting process that's not actually early voting. And what I mean by that is, we have these, in some counties, these drop-off satellite locations for people to turn in their mail-in ballots, or, the county election office in every county where you can turn in your ballots. And we've started to see long lines of people trying to drop their ballots off in person. Now, this was especially happening back when you could still apply for a mail ballot. And so people were applying and then dropping off the ballots all sort of in one fell swoop. And, it does feel like early voting if you do it that way, but it's still a mail process, technically, even though nobody's mailing anything. And so, one of the questions that I started getting a lot was people were seeing these long lines and they were saying, well, is this, you know, voter suppression, especially because counties could only accept these applications up to a certain time. It was 5 p.m. on the 27th, which was just a couple days ago. And then they turned people away and said, no, you have to vote in person. Now, Pat, like we're so familiar with these laws that say, oh, you can, you know, stay in line. If you're in line, stay in line on election day, even if the, you know, polls are closing soon. But it's different for these satellite offices, isn't it?
It is. It is. And there's been a tremendous amount of there has been a good amount of frustration. I mean, both on voter side and election official side, because they've had to stand these things up. They're working with new law and new processes. And on the voter side, yeah, there's every expectation that if you get yourself to one of these offices, you know, by the cutoff time, by the time that at least it was published, that it was closed, that you'd have a chance to vote. And it is not like polling places on election day where Gloria noted if you're in line by 8 o'clock, you should stay there until you cast a ballot. That's another very important thing to know. Or, you know, I think oftentimes when you go to the DMV, there's a similar policy. Once you're in line, you're going to be provided service. It's been one of these challenges that it's been difficult to work through, and to an extent, impossible to avoid, because I think it was remarkable that Philadelphia even stood up 17 of these offices. To stand up 40 or 50 would have been not possible. But I think. Although there's been some frustration, folks have been very patient. I mean, and the lines themselves speak to the voters' intent to cast ballots in this election.
Mm-hmm. We've got a caller on the line who I want to get to, but we just have a couple minutes left. Kenny in Westchester, what is your question as briefly as you can? Kenny, are
Hello?
You there? Hi, yes. Really briefly, because
yes,
we just
I
have
am.
A couple minutes. What's your question?
So I'm wondering, I've heard that President Trump has shifted his sort of disinformation campaign about the ballot process being, fraudulent to now including a very strong message about the American people deserve to know on election night who's won the election. And yesterday I read a public comment from Brett Kavanaugh sort of siding with that conceptually. I'm not sure if it was aligned time-wise, like in response to Trump's comments, but I'm trying to understand, is there any kind of a legal precedent for in place for them to press that concept and force any kind of a call prior to the elections ballots actually being legitimately counted across the country?
Yeah, great question, and a good one for our Gloria. Gloria, what do you think?
It's your democracy, and therefore the people decide who will be president of the United States. And if the people's ballots are not all counted on election day, then we will see when the ballots will be counted within a reasonable time. And usually a person concedes, and so the ballots are never completely counted on election day or even the day after election day. But the candidate concedes, seeing that they have lost by enough votes that they know that their opponent has won. And so in this particular instance, there's not a legal precedent that says that a person has to be designated as president on that day, but usually the political stance is a person sees the outcome of the votes already counted and concedes the election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really helpful. And Gloria, I also wanted to put the question that I was asking Pat before to you. And just quickly, because we have about a minute left, we have seen all these long lines in Pennsylvania, and, it's technically allowable by law because we don't actually have early voting. But, is there any advice that you would give to voters who are struggling to maybe drop their mail ballots off or are really trying hard to navigate this new system?
Have a voting plan. Have a plan A and a plan B. If the weather is inclement or rainy and cold like it is today, then have a plan B. What day do you think that you can get to those polls, have some snacks, warm clothes, an umbrella, and a book? And just know that this is your civic duty as a citizen, and just make a joyful time of it. This is going to be not only a contentious election, but it's a time in which you are a part of history. And knowing that, if you have a plan A and a plan B, then this election is yours, because this is your democracy.
Yeah, and just a couple seconds left. Pat, that's a good note to end on. Any advice for voters? Final words?
No, I'm with Gloria 100% on that. The only specific is, do not leave until you cast a ballot. And that if you're not allowed to use the voting machine for whatever reason, cast a provisional ballot.
All right. You heard it here. Have a plan. Stay calm. Make sure you you can ask us here at WHYY. If you have any questions, you can ask your county election officials. You can ask state officials. But on election night, stay in line. You know, it's your right to vote. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much to Pat Christmas with the Committee of 70 and Gloria Brown Marshall at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. I'm Katie Meyer, the political reporter for WHYY, and it has been a pleasure taking your questions this hour.
Supporting WHYY Comcast. Over the last decade, Comcast has connected 4 million students from low-income homes to high-speed Xfinity Internet. And now they're creating Lift Zones by providing Wi-Fi to 1,000 community centers to turn them into safe places to study. And Drexel University. Do you experience binge eating, emotional eating, or out-of-control eating? Are you also interested in losing weight? Researchers at the Well Center at Drexel University are recruiting adults for a clinical trial designed to help individuals both lose weight and reduce problematic eating behaviors. Treatment is currently available remotely. Learn more on our website at drexel.edu/weightloss. That's drexel.edu/weightloss.
This is WHYY-FM Philadelphia, WNJN-FM Atlantic City, WNJZ-FM Cape May Courthouse, WNJM-FM Manahawkin, WNJB-FM Bridgeton, and WNJS-FM Berlin.